So I went down to the American consulate in Edinburgh and explained the situation and said I'd been advised that I need to get to United States as soon as possible, where my husband has a good job and we own a house. And they said, you don't need a visa. You travel on your husband's visa. And luckily, I had got his passport number while he had come with Ivy that one night and had the number. And so they were able to say, you can leave tonight.
Wow.
So, but then I didn't have the money to get six people from east of Scotland to Arizona, you know, just overnight. It's a lot of money. Yeah. I had nothing. And the parents were already paying for our rented house in Scotland. But luckily, his three older brothers, the attorney, and his second oldest brother, who was a nuclear scientist down at Aldermaston in south of England, those two were earning a lot of money. And the others, less, well, they were still students. But between the six brothers, they came up with the money for the fares, and Donald had to pay it all back, which he did eventually. It took him about a couple of years, I think, to pay it all back. So as soon as we could get the money and the tickets, I flew out to Arizona. I told Donald that we were coming and arrived at Sky Harbor in Phoenix. No Donald. I didn't know where the house was. He had sent a young student who was apparently staying in the house, and he had come to fetch us and drove us home in our car. And still there was no sign of Donald for about another 10 days when eventually he showed up. I don't know. He had apparently sent Ivy back home once he realized that I was serious about coming. And then I suppose maybe he'd stayed in a motel, couldn't face me. But eventually, after 10 days, he showed up, and it was a very icy meeting. He was very distraught, very angry, didn't want to talk to me, didn't want to have anything to do with me. So it was a very, very difficult beginning coming to the United States.
And so, you know, what are you thinking you're going to do? Were you going to get a job to try to seek a job to teach with your degree? Or you just, this was the advice you had been given to come to the United States, you know, to where you had a house, where you had some means of support. Like, had you thought ahead of what your plan was? Were you going to try to make the marriage work, or what were you thinking at that time?
Well, I was thinking that if I get to the States, at least I will have a house to live in. And Donald was earning a good salary at the university. I thought, well, probably it will end up in divorce. I didn't know what would happen with Ivy, whether she would stick around. Apparently, she was furious that I had come out, furious that Donald had said, well, you'll have to go back to the United States till I can get a divorce, and then you can come out again. I'll bring you out again, and then we can get married. But while Barbara's here, and until I get a divorce, you'll have to go back to Malaysia. I can't support Barbara and the children and Ivy together. It's just, obviously, he had the common sense to realize he couldn't do that. I tried to get a teaching job, but although they accepted my degree, they wouldn't accept the teaching qualifications. They said, you've got to do all these methods classes all over again, even though I'd done them in Scotland. So I thought, well, that's going to take me a couple of years, night school, to do this if I'm working in the daytime. So I tried different jobs. I tried real estate, and I worked in a sort of newspaper clipping office, and different jobs, and going to night school. But the marriage never took off. Donald was always I mean, at one point he just left and rented a townhouse for himself and went and lived there and left us in the main house. It was a very, very difficult time. And after 5 years, we did eventually get a divorce.
And you write of this story. You write about the marriage falling apart and, you know, Donald abandoning you. Was it at that time or was it later when you felt like you were starting to search for some sort of meaning to your life? When did that kind of search begin?
Well, the search didn't, I mean, all this time, I was just obsessed with trying to keep things going day by day.
Sure.
It was just a nightmare. I never knew what was going to happen. Donald was always, wouldn't speak to me, wouldn't explain anything, wouldn't help. We just lived two totally separate lives. After the divorce, which was a terrible, terrible experience because he literally threw me out of the house. And luckily I had my summer money from this little school that I'd been teaching at. They would pay you the 9 months that you work. And then at the beginning of the summer in June, they would give you 12 weeks salary to tide you over the summer until you started earning again in September. So I had about $2,000 at the time. This was in 1976, summer of 1976. So I thought, well, I'm not going to waste this on an apartment. I'm going to buy myself somewhere where I can live with the children. So I found a townhouse, paid all my $2,000 down, had this house, and I had nothing in it, no furniture, nothing, not a mattress, not a pillow, not a cup, saucer, nothing. Donald would let me take nothing from his house. So I lived there the whole summer with nothing, just slept on the bare floor. In order to pay the monthly payments that I had to pay for the electric and this sort of thing, and the gas in the car, I was already working part-time at a drugstore. And I asked the man, could you give me full-time work as many hours as possible over the summer? Because I have absolutely nothing else to live on. So he gave me every hour possible. And I worked there every single day, 7 days a week, right through the summer. And then I continued working once I got my school job back. So I was just busy, busy, busy all the time, just trying to make things meet.
So you didn't really have time to think about the meaning of life.
No, I can't. Just desperate
survival,
trying to keep yourself alive.
Right.
I mean, after I paid all the bills for the car and for the house, and for the electric, I couldn't turn the air conditioning on, even though the temperature sometimes went up to 120 degrees. It was just suffocating in that Phoenix area. I had to pay all these bills. And at the end of all that, I had enough, I think, for just a loaf of bread and a bottle of milk. And I just lived on that each week. For a cup and a saucer and a plate, I just took that from the Skaggs drugstore. And that was all I had in the house, nothing. So I lived like that till September. And at that point, when I got my job back, Adrian and Ingrid, who were just fed up living with Donald, moved into my townhouse with me, knowing that I now had my school salary. So from then on, I had the two younger children. Angela was already gone. She was at Stanford University in California. Leslie had got an apartment. She was doing a master's degree by now in Arizona State University. And Ivan also, he was living with Donald in the house. So the family was just split up.
Hmm.
But from that time on, when I had the two children, Ingrid and Adrian, living with me, I then began to think, you know, what is this all about? I've been through a horrendous experience. Nobody except my children really cares anything about me. I have no family back in England I can go back to. My mother had already died. My father was just a war invalid. My sister is married with her own family to take care of. And I can't go back to Scotland because I've already put them through turmoil, Donald's parents. So, you know, what am I struggling for? I've got nothing really, just my children. I had to provide for them. You know, and it was at that point that I started thinking, you know, what's life all about? I mean, is there anything worth living for apart from my two children?
Just a second,
and it was
Barbara.
At that point.
So you said, Barbara, that it was at that time that you, during through the midst of just seeking to survive, that you started to ask some deeper questions. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I had finally survived, got myself a reasonably good job in a high school teaching Latin and English. I had my two youngest children with me. But I began to think, you know, there must be more to life than this. It's been too much of a struggle. There's got to be something more. And I thought, well, all those comfy words, they kept coming back into my mind. And I thought, well, I wonder if there is something in them. People go to church every Sunday and they're listening to sermons and they seem to be believing it. They wouldn't keep going back unless they were getting something out of it. So I thought, well, I'm going to see if I can find something. So I thought, well, I'm going to try everything I know. So I went first off to the Anglican Church, went there, and it just passed over my head. It didn't connect. Every Sunday, I went to a different denomination. I went to a Presbyterian, a Congregationalist, a Lutheran, a Baptist, everything. I went back to a Catholic church. All these different churches.
Did you know any Christians, do you think? I mean, was that what, or was it just these more internal thinking that was causing you to, like, oh, I'll just kind of go down the line and try out all these churches?
No, I didn't know anybody who was at any church, but I knew from my childhood and just from observing that people went to church on Sunday, thought there's got to be something. I'll just try it till I find out what it is. So I was, every Sunday I was going, but not really connecting with any of it. Maybe I had the wrong attitude. Maybe I felt, well, I don't really believe this. It's just the same as I had when I was brought up. Just words, words, words. And you know, you follow the rules. But one Sunday, I was invited to this little free evangelical free church. There were about 120 people there. And I sat at the back, as I always did, because I didn't want to be too obvious. And I thought, well, if I am offended or I don't like it, I can walk out. So I sat at the back. And the sermon absolutely hit me. I was nearly screaming. The pastor was a young man, Nathan Lutz. He was only about, I think, 27, 28 years old. And he had chosen as his verse for the sermon that Sunday, Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9. For it is by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. And I thought, I have never, ever heard anything like this. What are they telling me? What is this that I'm hearing? Have been saved? That's past tense. And I'd always been taught, you know, you've got to work towards this. This is something in the future for those that are good enough. And then it's God that's doing the saving. not me and my measly efforts at going to mass and confession and all this stuff that we did at the Anglo-Catholic Church. And then the punchline was not of works. And I thought all that we had to do, doing all this, following all these rules, is nothing. It says here, not of works. So I was absolutely in shock, because in the Anglo-Catholic Church and generally in the Church of England, nobody ever reads the Bible. I'd never, ever read the Bible. Never had crossed my mind. None of my family, my mother, even though a devout Christian, never read the Bible. And so I'd never heard this before. All I knew were these 52 excerpts from the Gospels and Epistles, and that didn't happen to be one of them. I'd never heard that before. So I was in shock, and I sort of thought, what is this? I had to find out more. So I signed up for the Sunday school. They had excellent, excellent teachers in that church. Jeff Lavelle, and he taught the Old Testament, and I can't remember the name of the person who taught the New Testament. And Nathan Lutz gave excellent sermons every week. And I was just learning, and I couldn't. I got a Bible from the church, and I started reading it, started with the Gospels, went right through. I couldn't get enough of it. As soon as I got home from school, I would start reading the Bible. I had questions all the time. I went to the Sunday school, and I remember one time they were teaching Romans, and I was just couldn't get enough answers. I was just asking questions all the time. It just absolutely just transformed my way of thinking. It just gave me a purpose. It was just all so new, and I thought, how come I never, ever heard any of this before, never knew about it? All those years just drifting along day by day, and, you know, there was nothing in my life before.
How old were you at the time?
At the time, I was, must have been 48. I was... I know I was just about 50 when I was baptized, because I went for 18 months to that church, attending the Sunday schools and the sermon and the Bible studies in the people's home, because I wanted to be sure. You know, this was so revolutionary for me. I thought, this is not something I can just jump into. I need to know for certain what this is all about. And so I took my time. And so I was baptized with a group of young people, college age, and I was, I think, just coming up to 50 years old at the time when I was baptized. But it was an amazing, amazing transformation. I mean, for the first time ever, I could think, well, I know now what life is about.
Wow.
It's just... absolutely stunning.
So how did your life change?
Well, I became very, very involved in the church. I was I just couldn't get enough of it. I just wanted to read, find out as much as I could. I just loved going to church, going to the Bible study. I got very much involved in the church. They had, we had a large Cambodian refugee support mission, because all these people had were refugees from Cambodia at the time. So I taught them English and encouraged them. I mean, they had their own Bible study. So that took up a large part of my life. Saturdays, I was with the Cambodians, and also in their homes during the week teaching. Later on, I got involved in refugee work with Bosnians and Serbians, Croatians. That was later on in back in Arizona. Yeah, it just transformed my life. I had something to live for other than just sort of the daily wage and paying the rent and paying all these bills. And, you know, it gave you meaning in life. You could wake up to something that was worthwhile.
Barbara, thank you so much for sharing your story, and then how you became a Christian. Because of time, I have so many more questions about, you know, your life then with Christ, you know, after you came to faith and were baptized in that church. Maybe we could save it for another time. But I guess maybe a couple questions. One is, did you struggle with the goodness of God, or even his power, as you look back on your life and you thought of all the difficult things you had been through? I think a common question that many might have been asking is how could a good God have allowed this suffering and this injustice, as you thought about how your first husband treated you and so many of the difficult things? I mean, almost, you know, surviving a diet of mandarin oranges, french bread and coffee for a year, but more than that, the time where you it was like up to you to raise the five children. How are you thinking about God when you were coming to Christ and after?
Well, I was so happy, so just euphoric. Everything changed. Everything was just so wonderful that all the hardship and the misery and the difficulty and the just not understanding anything, it just all faded away. It was just all behind me. I now had a purpose, a reason to live, a reason to be thankful. And so all the hardship just somehow just melted away, just faded away. I just didn't dwell on it. It was no longer relevant to my life.
What is that?
Bother me. I didn't sort of think, oh, God's not been fair. I was just so happy with my new life. And that was just so absorbing. I had so many friends. I mean, before I'd had no friends at all. I was just living there in that townhouse with the two children and taking them to school and going to their school events. But I had nobody for myself. I was in a new country. I didn't know anybody in Arizona. But in the church, they were extremely friendly and just very encouraging. So it was just a whole new experience for me I'd never had before.
Praise God. And then just what led you back up, or what led you not back up, but here to the Pacific Northwest? How did you find yourself up here?
Well, I retired from, I went from Arizona, I went back to England for a couple of years. I didn't care for Arizona too much. I went back to England. Then from there, I went to Maryland to this daughter, stayed with her, and got a teaching job there in Maryland. And then after I retired, when I was 64, Dale wanted to come back to Arizona. He really liked it. So we retired to Arizona, lived there 5 years, and I went back to this faith church where I'd come to Christ and worked with the Cambodians at that time. And then Ingrid had got married up here in Portland, and her first child was born totally deaf, Clementine. And I thought, well, that baby is going to need help, totally deaf. Ingrid has to work because her husband didn't work. I don't know why she married him, but he didn't work. And so she was having to work and had this deaf child. So I told her, I'll be up as soon as you can find us a house to buy. So she started looking for a house. And immediately when Clementine was 6 months old, Dale and I came up to look after Clementine. And so I had her in with me the whole time while Ingrid was at work. But fortunately, at the age of 10 months, not too long after we came up, she had a cochlear implant. She was the youngest child in in Oregon to get that implant. It was a new invention, but it was they were putting it in younger and younger children, and she was the youngest one that had ever had it. Apparently, it's much the best to have the implant done before 1 year old or shortly after. If you have it done later on in life, it's not nearly so effective. Ingrid wanted the second implant done, but the insurance wouldn't cover it. And so it was not until 5 years later that Clementine got the second implant, which has never been so satisfactory. But that's why we came up to Portland. And even though Clementine could then hear, by this time Ingrid had Kiernan 11 months later, and she still needed help with the two children. So I stayed, and I've really enjoyed looking after all of Ingrid's children.
You've been doing that ever since.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Rupert's been in school now for 5-6 years, so
sure.
Right until he went to school. Mm-hmm. But I'm over at Ingrid's every day almost. You know, I go to all their sports activities, and I've been helping them with reading and this sort of thing, and I do a lot of yard work all the time.
And you've done work around the church with beautifying the area around the church and the properties.
Oh.
And you were involved in the Falathian class, as you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Anything that has been particularly encouraging in terms of your walk with Christ in the years that you have been here in Portland and at Henson?
Well, I think it's mainly through the people that you meet in the church. The Falathian class was just exceptional. They were just, that was the first class I was in. They were just an amazing group of people, Wayne Fraze, and there's very few, I don't know, Jerry Urich, I think, attended until a few months ago, and Bob Finzer and his wife, they still attend. But apart from that, they've all either passed on or they're in retirement homes. Then I attended the Mariners class under David Needham's teaching. And the classes have just been fantastic. I've also met a lot of people through David and Jeannie Hewitt's Christmas boxes, and I still do that every Monday with them. They used to organize the child care for the women's Bible study, so I helped with that for, I think about 14 years with David and Jeannie and the different helpers. So I think it's through the people in the church that you get your encouragement, and just to see how they live, it just affects your whole life to be in a community of Christians like that.
Well, Barbara, your example, your resiliency and perseverance through hard times, and just you sharing your story as well as, you know, writing it out. What made you want to write out your story and Scenes from My Life by Barbara Costner? What was the kind of impetus behind this book?
Well, it was definitely for my five children. They had had a particularly difficult childhood, especially the three older children, because their schooling was mainly in Malaysia in the upper elementary and junior high school years. They never had any school friends at all. They were always different from all the other children, were often teased, and just never enjoyed it. They were the local schools in Malaysia had about 50 to 60 children in a class. The schools were absolutely overwhelmed. They were all on double shift, so you either went from about 7 in the morning till midday, or you were in the afternoon shift from midday until about 5 or 6 in the evening. It was just a very difficult upbringing. They were never accepted. They never had friends. And so...
So you wrote the book for the kids,
yeah,
the grandkids.
To explain to why all this was.
And yeah.
The difficult time, the three older children were sent away to Scotland to the grandparents for one whole year, 13 months. I never saw them all that time.
Oh, my.
Because Donald said, oh, the local schools, it's not satisfactory. After the Malaysian riots... The Malaysian schools went to Malay language and the children didn't want to learn it. And so we had no option but to send them away. So they went to their grandparents in Scotland. So this, again, was all a new school, a different system. It was very difficult. My eldest daughter, Leslie, went to 11 different schools in her lifetime.
Oh, my goodness.
And they were in different nationalities, Australian, English, Scottish, Malay, just and different schools in each country. It was just not satisfactory. So they were very resentful as they grew up. Thinking, you know, why did we have such a difficult childhood? Why did we could we have no friends? Why did we have to keep moving? And you know, as soon as we got established in one school, Donald had put us in another school, and just it was difficult, very, very difficult.
And yet, through all that, you know, the Lord was working out His plan for your life, and brought, you said, two of your children to saving faith.
Yeah,
Ingrid,
two of them, the
Ingrid
two young
and
ones,
Adrian.
And Adrian,
yeah.
Yes.
And yeah, well, Barbara, you've been so generous with your time to share with us a little bit of your story. I'm sure we could have spent many hours, you know, hearing more about the different circumstances that the Lord brought you through, and hearing more about what it's been like to walk with Christ these last 40 plus years. But I just want to thank you so much for your time. And, you know, we give God all the glory for how He has saved you and how you have ministered to the brothers and sisters, the saints here at Hinson. So thank you.
Thank you very much.